Well, hello. Hi. So much love to you, friends. It is good to be with you. Thanks for hitting play and jumping in with us on the second week of a series we're calling Now What? Lessons from the Desert. And this is lesson number two. And whoo-wee, this one is doing some serious work within me, and so I'll do my best to walk through this. I would love to hear some feedback in terms of what is this doing within you? What questions does this raise? Where does this take you a bit? Let's talk about that. We can do that on Facebook Live at 3 p.m. Or you can shoot me an email, but let's connect on this. In part because I'd love to just hear from you. I'd love to chat with you. I'd love to connect because there's a lot happening, a lot going on, and we don't get to see one another the way we did, as we know. But I'm thrilled you stepped in here for week two. So let's dig in because we got a little bit of ground to cover, and I believe it is good for us. So the question is now what? The past feels really far away, does it not? The past feels really far away, and the future, if we're honest, is foggy. And I can't tell you what or when the future will actually be. What will it look like anyways? What is that? This that we're in then is an in-between space. We are in the in-between place and space, and it is really hard. I certainly feel confined because, well, we are all confined. But it's not just feeling confined physically, it's feeling confined a bit inside. And I have that. I feel that. And I imagine you do too. Which takes us. It leads me to an ancient, really old story about a place of in between, place of in between. So we're going to dive way back in the Hebrew scriptures. Some people call it the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures. We're going to be in the book of Exodus, which is the second book in a Bible you'd pick up, Exodus. So we're going to be there, and we're going to look at this Hebrew people who are rescued from being enslaved in Egypt. So they're in slavery in Egypt, and they were rescued out of this, known as the Exodus. And it takes them on this incredibly wild journey about, in many ways, growing up, maturing, becoming a people, and what that looks like. So we're going to be in the book of Exodus, chapter 13. So I know the MacDougall clan read a big chunk of scripture, Exodus 13, 17 through 14, 14. Well done there. Thanks for that. And that gave us the overview. So I'm going to dig into some of the nuance and pieces of it. So we'll begin in verse 17 of chapter 13. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. That's key. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Now, I want you to hang on to that last sentence. If they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Hang on to that because it'll be key here in a bit. So he takes them on a different path because what we begin to learn about this road will help develop this. But when you and I, when we pull up Google Maps and the directions give you three routes, maybe it gives you three routes. Here are three ways to get to your destination. I don't know about you, but do you not almost always choose the shortest one, right? Yeah. What's the shortest path? Because we're on a time deadline. We've got places to go. We've got somewhere to get to. I'm not monkeying around driving through these back roads and, no. We got to get there. So it is that. But here's the thing. The point isn't a comfortable trek to a vacation destination. That's not what's happening here in the Exodus. It's not, well, we just need to get there on this vacation destination. It's about a journey in which the Hebrew people will learn to trust the divine, the one who is rescuing them. That's what this journey is about. So it's not about the shortest path. It's about how can they learn to trust the divine who has rescued them from slavery. Now, the divine did not lead them on the road known to the Egyptians. This road where it says the Philistine road, the Egyptians know this as the Ways of Horus. That was the name of the road to the Egyptians, the Ways of Horus, because it represents the god Horus, here nor there. And later, though, later people would understand it as the Via Maris. The Via Maris, that's the road, that's the path, the Via Maris, which means the way of the sea. Now, my friends who were going to go on the Israel trip, you will recognize that name, Via Maris. Yeah, the way of the sea. It's an important road in the Middle East. So it was the shorter path, though. But this geographical route, what it does is it communicates to the reader. What it's doing to the reader is they just know this is a really key and heavily trafficked road for trade. So it's really important. And the Egyptians were constantly fighting battles and wars to keep control of this road. So the divine takes the Hebrew people a different way to keep them out of traffic jams and any high tension areas, because here's the thing, the divine knows the people are not equipped emotionally for war, for battle, even if they were physically equipped. Because the reality is, what you'll read around the story is, when they left Egypt, it says they left armed. They somehow brought weapons, they took weapons with them. So it's not that they weren't armed, apparently they were. The divine knows these people are not in any kind of place emotionally, spiritually, however it may be, to actually face battle. That's what it is. They're not equipped for any road rage, if you will. So now what I want to do is I want to show you a map. I want to show you a map of this Way of Horus. On your map, you'll see that there's an orange line that's just the way of the ways of Horus, that road. Look at that, because that's the shortest, quick, like it's the clearest, shortest. That's the route you would go, just so you have that. And then you will, then you'll look at the green arrows and the path that the Hebrew people were led on, and you'll go, when you look at it, you're like, what in the world? That's a mess. It seems like they took the longest way possible to move around here. It looks like they may have done some circles. They're bouncing around. At one point, they turned around and started heading back to, like, what's going on here? To the outsider, you and I, or anyone on the outside, we go, these people, that's just foolish. What are they doing? It seems like they're on a journey in a pinball arcade game. They're just bouncing around. It looks like they're wandering the desert. But that's not what the text tells us. So let's look at the text that says in verse 21 of chapter 13, By day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way. The Lord, the divine, is guiding them, is leading them. And by night in a pillar of fire. So they have a cloud for the day that's like this guiding, and a pillar of fire at night to give them light, so that they could travel by day or night. Wow. Yeah. Now, first, the divine is leading. Moses, Moshe, who we have in this story, he's simply a finger pointing to the transcendent one. That's what he is a good leader. He's just pointing to the transcendent one. That's where we need to go. This is what we're following. Now, secondly, when it says a cloud and in a pillar of fire, yeah, I love the JPS commentary, the Torah commentary says it this way. The best we can do is symbolize, however inadequately, the divine presence as a mysterious, diaphanous, luminescent mist. Right? A mysterious, diaphanous, luminescent mist. Now, that word diaphanous, which is a great word, is like it's transparent. You can see it, sort of, but you see through it. I would say that picture, what it gives me is, yeah, you can sort of see it, but it's more of seeing through it. So it's your guide, but it's more a lens. It's more a lens. It's how you will see the other side, what's on the other side. You'll see other things. You'll see the world through this. Yeah, beautiful language. Now, that's what this picture, imagery, we're given. So the Hebrew people were led by the divine to them, it felt like wandering. Because think about it, you know, like, hey, this road, if we take this road, we get there. What are we doing? Like, they had also feel that because the path they're on is not the shortest. It's not the easiest. It's not the clearest. Are we preaching yet, right? That path looks really easy or smooth or clear, and it's short. Why are we not taking that path? Scholars point out that when an Egyptian army took that direct route, the ways of Horus, that road, it would take them 9 to 10 days to get from Egypt to the land of Canaan, the destination that the Hebrew people are supposed to be heading towards. It would take 9 to 10 days. So later on, we'll see in the story that the Hebrew people are in the desert. They do this journey for 40 years. So something else more is going on here. So this goofy path the Israelites were led on, it's confusing to them, but anyone on the outside, including Pharaoh, the Egyptian Pharaoh, which we see is actually the point of taking this path. But in Exodus chapter 14, verse 3, it says, Pharaoh will think, he sees this happening unfolding. He's being reported to, hey, this journey they're on, what? It says, Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by a desert. What are they doing? Now, the Hebrew word for wandering, that word wandering, where Heath says they're wandering, is the word buch. 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 Great word. It carries the sense of hopelessly confused. Pharaoh's like, these people are hopelessly confused, essentially, is what he's saying, because they are hemmed in by the Egyptian border fortresses. So what's surrounding them? Egyptian border fortresses, the desert, not a good time. You don't live in the desert. And the sea, Mediterranean Sea. This thing's got them hemmed in. We would call that stuck. These people are kind of stuck. And Pharaoh sees this and thinks, what's going on? But that's the point. Pharaoh is the point of what's going on here, what the divine's doing in this. The Hebrew people are led on a swirly route, and they find themselves seemingly stuck in what we would say almost like a cul-de-sac. And then what happens in the story, Pharaoh and the Egyptian army is going to go after them. They're going to have a change of plans, change of mind. Like, I know we let the people go, but Pharaoh's like, that was not wise. We need to go get them. He goes after them. And as the reader, here's where it's just hard, though. As the reader, we are told that this part of the wandering is that the divine will be given glory in ridding the Israelite people of Egypt forever. We get to learn that. We see that's what's happening in the wandering. It tells us, oh, this is setting up Pharaoh for God to act, for the divine to move and rid the Israelite people of this problem of Pharaoh in Egypt. We learn that. But if you're the Hebrew people, you don't know what's going on other than here comes Pharaoh and his army. Because to them, that's what they see. They're hemmed in all sides. And now we're kind of stuck and we turn around and look. And it says in verses 10 to 12 of Exodus 14, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up. So you're kind of hemmed in. You look up. And there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us out to the desert to die? hey, Moses, did you bring us here because all the cemeteries are just full in Egypt? Is that why you, so we got to leave? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say, now this is interesting, didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians, to be slaves, than to die in the desert. So why back then, I asked you to hang on to that last verse early on, that one verse, because this is exactly what the divine said would happen if the people face war. They face a battle is in front of them. What will they do? They'll have a change of heart, change of mind, and wish they were back in Egypt. Remember, it said when they left Egypt, they were armed for battle. You can read that in the text. That's a part of that story. Yet the divine knows that it does not matter whether or not they have enough weapons or big and strong enough weapons. The truth is, they are not emotionally equipped for this. And that truth is one we need to hear today. The battle is so much more than physical weapons. It requires people to be dialed in emotionally and spiritually. Yeah, this battle isn't about weapons. It's about our hearts. It's about our souls. It's about our emotional well-being, our mental capacity to hang on in the midst of this. So the Hebrew people are taken on a path that doesn't make sense to them. And now the enemy is on top of them. The one thing they have certainty of, and this is so important, the one thing that they do have certainty about is the familiarity of the past. The one thing we know is back there, Egypt. So they say, we'd rather serve as slaves. We'd rather be enslaved than live, and what they assume is die in the desert. I'd rather be a slave there in something we know than the mystery here, which we just assume is death. I would say it like this. A wobbly present and a foggy future can tempt us to return to an enslaved past. Yeah, it's one of the things I'm learning, right? Man, when the present feels wobbly and the future is foggy, the temptation is to just want to go back to the past that I know, even if it's slavery. And it would be easy for us, looking on from the outside again, from this place of knowing how the story's going to go, though, to think, man, these people are just complaining, or they lack faith. So what we need here is a picture. So I want to give you a picture on the screen of what it was like for them. And what you'll see on this picture is to the left, your left, looking at the screen, what they were at. To the left is the land of Goshen. That is Egypt. What they came out of. That's Goshen. That's Egypt, which they left. And the land they are journeying to your right, where they're supposed to head. As you can see, Egypt then is green. It's lush. And it's comfortable. Why? It's fed by the Nile River. It's taken care of. And then Israel is desert. Where they're heading, where they're both wandering and where they're heading, it's desert. It's deeply uncomfortable. And the original definition of the term hot mess. That's what you see to your right. Now, what you see, though, and what's amazing about this picture is you don't ease into it. It's not like, hey, I think things are changing. Can you see how this is like whiplash? You can have 1 foot in green lush and 1 foot in desert. It's like that. So you don't ease in. So imagine the emotional and physical whiplash of we're there and now we're heading this way. It better be a short, quick path because what we're walking into is unpleasant. It is hot. It is not sustainable. Are you with me? That's how it can feel. That's how it can feel. So now you and I, we're several weeks into being shut in. And the voices are getting louder and louder. We'd rather die doing the familiar of the past. The comfort of Egypt. Doing what we want rather than travel in this desert. Can you hear those voices? Yeah. But it's the in-between where the people of God are formed. The desert is for formation. This is where we're being formed. This is where the divine meets us. What I would say is we are being offered spectacles for the eyes of our heart in order to see the diaphanous cloud that is the divine. That's what we're being offered in the desert. Hey, I want to hand you some glasses, some lenses, so that you can see the diaphanous cloud, the divine who is leading you. But you have got to have eyes to see, is how it would be. And that's what we're getting here. We, in this quarantine, we're being offered time and space to think through our ways and customs of life, how we've been living. How are we doing as stewards of all that has been given to us? How are we doing with that? How have we been living in a healthy and sustainable manner? First, as individuals, you can think of the individual families, but we go, how have we been doing? Are we living in a healthy and sustainable way as a family? Then how about as a community? How about as states? How about as a nation? How about as a global community? How have we been doing? Because here's the thing. Of course, it's much easier to get lost in what we, right now, what we no longer get to do or buy or where we get to go. Rather than, and it's easy to do that, to get lost in that narrative, rather than do the hard work of being formed and reformed. Friends, the battle is not out there. The battle is within us. Are you catching that? The seductive path is often called the path of least resistance. That's the ways of Horus, that road. What's the path of least resistance, as in the shortest path and the most direct path? So it always is like, oh, let's just go that way then. You can hear the voice, I'd rather die in Egypt. Yeah, I know it's broken, but it's familiar and it's comfortable. And in this desert road, it's long and it's asking us to trust a mysterious cloud of fire. Yeah. What this does, this story is teaching us that the Christian life is not about a singular moment or prayer, but it's about a long journey trusting the divine. This certainly invites you and I to wake up to the fact that we are rarely in control. Yeah, I know that hurts. That stings a little bit. Are we waking up to the fact we're rarely in control? We like to think we're in control. We're rarely in control. But the next verse, this next verse, well, it meets us in that place. Exodus 14, verse 13. Moshe. And this, and part of this is the complete Jewish Bible version, because the language helps us stay context. Moshe answered the people, stop being so fearful. Remain steady, and you will see how Adonai is going to save you. You're going to see how Adonai is going to save you. He will do it today. Today you have seen the Egyptians, but you will never see them again. Whew. Yeah. Now, here's a couple fascinating things. One, that word save, Adonai is going to save you, deliver you, as some translations say, but that word in the Hebrew is the word Yeshua. Yeshua, translated later, what we read as Jesus. Jesus, yeah, salvation, God's salvation, Yeshua, yeah. So if that's the case, if God's going to save us, God's going to rescue us and get rid of these Egyptians, then what are the instructions for the people? Like, okay, well, what is our thing? Verse 14, Adonai will do battle for you. Just calm yourselves down. Now, that word calm there, or in the most common translations, or maybe the most read today, the word will be still. That's a problem. That's why we went with this, because it's not be still. It says be calm. But that word calm is haresh, haresh. Go ahead and say haresh. And it means hold peace, remain silent. It's not about standing still. It's about holding to peace, but it's about not, I don't need to talk right now, but it's going to be clinging to, holding to the peace, because the divine is going to do the heavy lifting. The divine is going to take care of that battle. What I'm to do right now is quiet the inside. Quiet the inside is to remain calm, to cling to the peace that God is in control. This is a challenging call for patience. Now, I know on video, like I could like re-record, I could do it. If you say a swear word, you probably want to cut that out. And for some of you, and maybe sometimes me, patience is a swear word, right? Yeah, it's hard. Patience is, if we're honest, patience is a form of suffering. Patience is a form of suffering. Now, there's an early church planner in the New Testament, a guy we often refer to as Paul, a guy named Paul, early church planter, right? He expounds on this wisdom of patience when he writes to the church in Rome. In the book of Romans, or the letter of Romans, chapter 5, verses 3 and 4, it says this, "Let us glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character. And character develops hope." Yeah, I would say that these words from Paul, they're annoying and they're stunning. Right? Yeah. Oh, what they're doing there, you're like kind of annoyed though. Like, what? I don't want suffering. I know, but listen, hang in there. Suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. Yeah, that's beautiful. Perseverance, character, and hope. Here's the thing. They're attributes of the long game. They are dance partners of the eternal. That's what these characteristics are. Yeah. So I would say it this way. My heart, in this whole thing, my heart, it swells when I see and hear neighbors, friends, and you all. Walker Harbor Church, when I see you all choosing love, choosing love, choosing to serve others, and choosing to sacrifice your rights for the well-being of the wider community. Yeah, that's a form of suffering. I'm going to set this stuff aside to serve the wider community. This is patience. In perseverance. It's choosing the desert adventure over the green, lush, familiar Egypt. Yeah. We are playing the long game. We are playing the long game, friends, and traveling the long road, the desert road. This is not the easy path. It is brutal learning how to navigate the desert terrain. And paradoxically, it's life to the full. It's the truest and deepest way to live. Isn't that? It's maddening though, in some ways, right? But we're playing the long game. And the desert, it's hot and sweaty and it's brutal and it's difficult, but it's paradoxically, it's actually life to the full because it's getting rid of the things that are unnecessary. It's formation, as we talked about last week. And it's the deepest way to live. And it requires for us to do this divine patience and humble sacrifice. That's going to take patience that we need, hey, God, we need your help in living from this place of patience. We need to just catch a glimpse, to be able to sacrifice in these ways. This is hard. And can I tell you, I'm having some good days. I have good days filled with gratitude for the endless grace and the goodness that surrounds me. I have good days, friends, sure. And I have certainly had bad days in this. I've had days. I've had the ugly days of soul sweating, because I'm in the desert, much like you. So I've had the days where it's like soul sweating in the desert. It's hard. And this ancient story then reminds me that it's not new and I am not alone. You are not alone in this. You are not alone in this. So would you join me in choosing trust? So I just want to invite you. Would you join me in choosing trust? Would you confess with me? We don't always know the best path. We don't always know the best path. God, the divine, knows how to take these people. And when you look on a map, that way seems the way, the ways of Horus. That road seems the road. And so the people, they would be like, well, let's do that. We'll get there pretty quickly then. Let's do that. I think we can get there quicker. And the divine says that's not the path because we got some work today. Can we confess we don't always know what's best and that we have to learn to trust? So would you do that? Would you join me in trusting the divine? Because that's tapping into a deeper knowing. That's tapping into a deeper knowing. And that's what we need to do. We need to trust the divine in the desert. Because we don't always know what's best. Yeah. That's what's been doing some work in me. And I'd imagine is doing some work in you. And I invite you to invite the divine to do this work in you. Deep breath. Yeah. Okay. How about a word of benediction before we go? A quick prayer and a word of benediction. Gracious God, I bless you for these people, this community that we can share in life together. God, I am grateful that I'm not in this alone. We are not in this alone. We are in this together. And it looks different for each one of us, but we are in the desert. Everyone's in the desert. No one's excluded from this desert path that we're currently on, but that we would learn to listen one another, help one another, serve one another. So God, I bless you that you meet us right where we are here in the desert, and that we then can be there for one another, that we're not in this alone. God, give us spectacles for the eyes of our heart, that we would see you, our guide, and follow you. And may we, God, help us to confess, to acknowledge, to recognize when we don't know, when we're confused, that we would just holler that out. Yeah, I don't get it. God, and then you would meet us there. I'm grateful for this community, and I pray you're meeting us, you're providing for us, as you do, and we will bless you in the name of Christ Jesus. Amen. Now, we got to get up a little bit here. We got to move for a little benediction. My friends and my family, known as Walker Harbor Church, may you May you have eyes to see. May the eyes of your heart see the diaphanous mist that is the divine. And it's more so that you would then have eyes to see that the divine is that which we see everything else, that we see through the divine and everything else, that your perspective be shifted. May you have eyes to have the perspective of Christ and how you take that next right step on the path that doesn't always seem to make sense. But may you follow the divine on the path that we are being led on. And know, my brothers and sisters, that the divine is with us. He meets us right here, right now, and the divine is with us. And so as you go, maybe just to your front yard, maybe just to your backyard, but as you take that next step in this desert, may you know that the grace and peace of Christ goes with you all. Amen and amen.